What do you think makes for good writing for radio?
I don't know. I wish I did know. I mean, here's what I think. Okay. You...
Wait a minute. Why am I talking to you? This is How Sound, the backstory to great radio storytelling. How Sound is a production of PRX and Transom. I'm Rob Rosenthal. Noel King had a lot of radio experience before joining NPR's Planet Money about a year and a half ago. Marketplace, The Takeaway, freelancing, she's written a lot of stories. But one day, Noel's at Planet Money struggling to write a piece, a complicated one, she says, and she was doing what she'd always done. She'd sit at a computer, type words, you know, writing. But the words weren't coming until she remembered how Planet Money thinks about storytelling. Imagine you walk into a bar and you tell a friend a story about the economy.
And I was like, for the first time, I looked at that and I was like, okay, what if I was to just walk into a bar and tell a story, which is something I do know how to do. So I called up a friend and went out to a bar with her and said, I'm working on this very difficult story, this very difficult episode about Baltimore. Can I just tell you what it is? And then from telling her that story, it was, you know, we were there for like 3 hours, but I told her the story and I could see the places where she was getting bored and I could see the places where she was really engaged and I could see the places where I was being confusing. And ever since then, that's how I write for Planet Money. I take someone out first and I tell them the story in person and then I read their face and then I go back and then I walk around and then I tell myself the story in my head again. And then I go back and then I sit down and then I write. So that's really different from sitting down in front of your computer and starting with, you know, an opening line.
In short, what Noel took away from that experience was this. When you're writing for radio, you're not really writing, you're telling.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I need to hold your attention for the next 3 minutes 30. I don't want to write you an essay, dude. I want to, like, tell you something.
Now, to take this one step further, Noel says, feel what you're trying to say.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. That's what makes for good talking usually, right?
You can hear this approach to writing, or maybe I should say telling, in a story Noel produced last fall on flood insurance, which Noel readily admits is not a riveting topic.
Definitely deadly boring. Yeah.
Yet Noel makes the story interesting because of the way she tells it. She peppered her 3.5-minute story with little turns of phrase and brief, unconventional choices. Writing that sounds more like telling. The premise of the story was this. According to Noel's reporting, billions of dollars will be paid to homeowners with flooded homes in 2017. The payments are made through the National Flood Insurance Program of the federal government. A small fraction of the claims, just 1%, account for 25% of the payments.
They're called repetitive loss properties. Jennifer Bales owns one. This is her third flood since 2009. By now, she's an expert with a spiral notebook she jokingly calls the Book of Life. It's a list of everything she owns for the insurance adjusters.
Front doormat, Revere stock pot, let's see, 10-inch griddle, 8-inch skillet.
What catches my ear in that clip is when Noel says this.
By now, she's an expert. Yeah, that was a good example of when I say write what you feel. So I was down in Houston for 4 days talking to people like Jennifer whose houses had flooded repeatedly. And the thing that made me so, I felt sympathetic right off the bat. There's no way around that. But the thing that made me frustrated and infuriated on their behalf was that to them, this no longer feels like a monumental deal. Everyone has their checklist for when their house floods. Everyone has the first thing they do, the second thing they do, the third thing they do for when the house floods. And I was sitting there and I was talking to people. I'm like, why are you guys, like at points I was actually getting kind of worked up. I'm like, why are you guys acting like this isn't a big deal? And people kept telling me some version of that. Because I've done it 3 times. Do you understand that if you've done something 3 times, you're not a rookie anymore? You know exactly what you're doing. And so that line, because by now she's an expert, was one born out of my own frustration and amazement that people who flood repeatedly, people whose homes flood repeatedly, they know exactly what they're doing. They know exactly what they're doing. Jennifer made me strap on a respirator before we went inside her house.
I would suggest putting this on.
I will
on,
put this so on.
Put
okay,
your stuff down.
This
I'll
is a real mask.
To,
okay,
yeah.
Let's see.
Because when the water came up 5.5 feet, it wasn't just water. It was sewage, too.
This living room was completely full of sewage water. Up in,
and mud, but there's a lot of feces in here too.
Here's something else you wrote. Jennifer made me strap on a respirator before we went inside her house. Now, I feel like typically a reporter might say, we wore respirators, or I put on a respirator. But the idea that Jennifer made me, I don't know, it just sounded different to my ear.
Yeah, no, that's another come back and think about what really happened when you were in the field and feel it. And I'll tell you this, I didn't want to put the respirator on because I'm a deeply anxious person. And in a respirator, it's really hard to breathe. And so I was, Jennifer pulled it out and I looked at it and I'm thinking in the back of my mind, oh shoot, I don't want to wear that. And then she put it on me. And you know, if you could hear the raw tape from that, there's like a minute of me being like, Jennifer, it's very hard to breathe. And like having a minor anxiety attack. And so then I got back and I'm thinking to myself, okay, what really happened in Jennifer's driveway? And the answer to my question was, you were anxious. She told you got to put this on because the house smells like sewage. You didn't really want to, but she made you. And so that's another example of, again, if I was telling you that story, well, I just did tell you that story, right? I wouldn't have written it like that, but that's certainly how I would have told it because that was what I was feeling and that was what happened. Jennifer isn't required to have flood insurance because her mortgage is paid off. But her mom was an accountant for Harris County, and she would come home and tell horror stories about what happened to people who didn't have flood insurance.
It was a no-brainer. It was just a no-brainer. You just have to have flood insurance.
So Jennifer appears to be doing everything right. But when you look at the numbers, something's going very wrong. Jennifer paid $83,000 for this house back in 1992. After the first flood in 2009, insurance paid out $200,000. After the next flood, another $200,000. And now, the worst one yet. She expects insurance will pay out about $300,000.
This one will pay out far more than the house and even the land is worth.
When her insurance check arrives in a few months, Jennifer's three-bedroom brick house will have cost taxpayers around $700,000 so far. Here, I'm going to let Carolyn Kuski, who directs Wharton's Risk Management and Decision Processes Center, state the obvious.
A private insurance company would never keep providing insurance to a home like that. And yet, the National Flood Insurance Program doesn't drop anyone and offers coverage to everyone. And so
you have situations like this.
There's a lot in that clip that sounds more like telling than writing. For instance, the way Noelle delivers the numbers.
When her insurance check arrives in a few months, Jennifer's three-bedroom brick house will have cost taxpayers around $700,000 so far.
And the way she finishes Carolyn Kuski's sentence.
The National Flood Insurance Program doesn't drop anyone and offers coverage to everyone, and so...
So you have situations like this.
But did you catch how Noelle introduced Carolyn?
Here, I'm going to let Carolyn Kuski, who directs Wharton's Risk Management and Decision Processes Center, state the obvious. Born out of sheer frustration. You and everyone listening, if you have stuck with me through the numbers, you know exactly what's going wrong here. You know that this is not how insurance works. You know that Jennifer's house should not be insured and that Jennifer should not be in that house and that house should be demolished or razed. And convention dictates that I need someone from Wharton to tell you what you already know. I always have some real feelings about these stories when it has to be boiled down to 3:30 and an expert has to be brought in, however good they are, however great their tape is. And Carolyn's tape was terrific. But like, let's be honest, she is not coming on here in this moment in a 3-minute and 30-second story. She is not coming on here to blow your hair back with some like, with her expertise in risk. She's going to come on and tell you this is not how insurance should work. So, yeah.
Now, of course, as much as Noelle may lean on telling rather than writing, there is writing involved. In this last clip I'm going to play, Noelle says it's a section she wrote more than told. In fact, she says she rewrote the section several times, looking for the perfect cadence. But even though this section was written, the way she reads it, it still sounds like telling.
There are also grants to relocate people like her. Buy them out, demolish their houses, return the area to grassland, an idea that Jennifer loves.
The house, I don't care, it could get blown to smithereens and I'll dance on the ashes.
That's the tape where she says, if this house was to burn down, I'd dance in the ashes. And so I'm trying to like trot that tape on stage in the most compelling way possible. And one of the things I really think about radio that makes it so unique that I love about it so much is that cadence can do so, so, so much, right? So you get these short, choppy sentences, one after the other, after the other, after the, and then one of them doesn't go all the way through, but Jennifer jumps on stage and says something outrageous.
As Noelle and I talked, we recognized that in some respects, this idea of telling rather than writing so that you feel what you're saying, well, it sounds a bit, well, I called it woo-woo.
Instead of woo-woo, I would say flaky.
Okay, flaky. Either way, convention says a reporter is relating a true and factual story, and they're expected to be dispassionate. To suggest a reporter should tell the story in order to feel it.
It does sound woo-woo. It does sound flaky. But here's the thing I'd say. Can we defend ourselves with this? It does tend to work. You do need people to keep listening to you. You've done all of this work and you do need people to whatever extent possible to not tune you out. And if you are feeling it, we know this, right? Having done this for a couple of years, we know if you're feeling it, someone is much less likely to tune you out and to turn off the radio or to have you on as background noise. We know that their ears are likely to prick up and they're more likely to pay attention if you feel it. So it is woo-woo, but I don't know, man. You just, you have to do whatever works, right?
Noelle King reports for Planet Money. This is How Sound, the backstory to great radio storytelling. It's produced by PRX and Transom. John Barth rocks my scripts. Thank you, John. This episode, a special thanks to WPLN in Nashville. I'm hogging a studio to record my narration while I'm here teaching a Transom traveling workshop. So many thanks to Anita Bug and the crew here at the station. I'm Rob Rosenthal. Thank you for listening.
From PRX and Transom.org.